这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry， 欢迎大家加入我们的互动 QQ 群90127292，这是我们的第二个 QQ 群了，因为第一个已经加满了2000个人，实在加不下更多的人了，所以呢，欢迎大家加入这一个新的 QQ 群。再说一遍，群号码是90127292，90127292，欢迎您进来下载更多的英语学习资料。那今天呢，又到周末了，每到周末我们都会来聊一聊 TED TED Talk， 希望对大家的雅思和托福学习有所帮助和启发。我们请来的专家老师依然是优EI学校的壮壮老师，老师好。
各位听众大家好 ，Larry 你好。啊，我们今天讲的这个呢挺有意思的，还是和心理学有一些关系。Psychologist Sean Acker 啊，这个人呢他是发言的人，他说 ：“We believe that we should work to be happy, but could that be backwards?”In this fast-moving and entertaining talk, psychologist Sean Acker argues that actually happiness inspires productivity. 它是什么意思呢？就是说这个工作到底是你是快乐的工作，还是工作是为了快乐？
后来他就说啊，原来啊，这个快乐 happiness inspires productivity， 它可以提高生产率，提高工作的效率。
对。哎，我就发现最近总是有这种类似的讨论哈，比如说有一对上海的夫妇40岁左右，他们呢就不工作了，每个月呢就花自己的这些积蓄，为什么呢？
因为他们有钱。
哎，他们在早年工作的时候呢攒下了钱，之后呢这两个人呢就是每天也不，既然不工作也不出现交通的花销了，是吧？一周呢可能会朋友一次半次，他们也都尽量避免了，因为他们说呢经常那个骗你的人都是你的熟人
哦。
然后呢他们就把这个降至最低，那同时也就减少了制装费、化妆品的这个费用，啊，请客吃饭的开销全都没了，所以两个人就低成本的过日子啊，在家里边宅着呀，然后在附近的菜市场买新鲜的东西啊，
那每天多没意思呀！
哎，他们有意思呀，什么看书、上网，
哦，对对对，
是吧？他们就是提前进入了退休的状态。
哦，
那这件事儿呢，在网上就引发了热议，啊，每个月这个一年花销可能才20000块钱。是吧？
真省钱，
真省钱。可是呢，有的人就觉得你这个生活质量是不是下降了呢？好，这两个人的回答是什么呢？我们的生活质量并没有下降，比那个朝九晚五的又去挤车又去看老板的脸色行事，我们现在过得更加自在了。
哦，对，他们不用工作了，他们更开心了，
对，
更 happy 了，
没错，
much happier than before。
嗯哼。所以呢，这个就是一个讨论。另外一个讨论呢，我看到在这个桂林啊这样山清水秀的地方呢，住一对瑞典的夫妇。这个瑞典夫妇呢，他们两个人也不工作啊，把自己的这个房子在瑞典的房子出租出去，所以每天呢就浪荡悠然自在的在这个桂林的山水啊之间享受生活，
一边收着房租，一边花着房租，是吧？
对，
嗯。
然后呢，当时人家就说呢，你们俩怎么是不是拿了政府的救济呢？他说还不是啊，这是我们自己努力的结果。那当年呢，他们两个人呢工作的时候呢，就是立下了一个志向，我们工作是有目的的。
嗯。
等我们一旦达到了这个收入的水准、积蓄之后，我们就不工作了。但是呢，这个心理学家就分析呢，好多人呢一旦进入到工作状态，他就停不下来了。
哎，
虽然他也觉得工作呢有什么荣誉呀、奖金呐、认可这种需要得到满足的啊情况出现，但是他就忘了自己其实自己想过的那种生活呢，
忘了最初是为什么出发了。
没错。
嗯，
所以呢大家又觉得应该反思。那这个 TED Talk 里边呢就讲到了，到底我们工作是为了什么呢？是为了让我们自己 happy， 还是说应该反向啊？是高兴的心情，这种感觉幸福感促进了你的工作效率呢？啊，他就是要讲这个道理。那这个人呢，同时又是 CEO of Good Think Inc. 你看这个英文，这个押这个韵 ，where he researches and teaches about positive psychology， 积极心理学。那我们先听一下，看看他怎样讲解。
好嘞。
When I was 7 years old and my sister was just 5 years old, we were playing on top of a bunk bed. I was 2 years older than my sister at the time. I mean, I'm 2 years older than her now, but At the time, that meant she had to do everything that I wanted to do, and I wanted to play war. So we were up on top of our bunk beds, and on one side of the bunk bed, I had put out all my G.I. Joe soldiers and weaponry, and on the other side were all my sister's Milos and ponies and ready for a cavalry charge. There are differing accounts of what actually happened that afternoon, but since my sister is not here with us today, let me tell you the true story. Which is, my sister is a little bit on the clumsy side, and somehow, without any help or push from her older brother at all, suddenly Amy disappeared off of the top of the bunk bed and landed with this crash on the floor. And I nervously peered over the side of the bed to see what had befallen my fallen sister, and saw that she had landed painfully on her hands and knees on all fours on the ground. I was nervous because my parents had charged me with making sure that my sister and I played as safely and as quietly as possible. And seeing as how I had accidentally broken Amy's arm just 1 week before, heroically pushing her out of the way of an oncoming imaginary sniper bullet, for which I have yet to be thanked. I was trying as hard as I could. She didn't even see it coming. I was trying as hard as I could to be on my best behavior, and I saw my sister's face as wail of pain and suffering and surprise, threatening to erupt from her mouth and threatening to wake my parents from the long winter's nap for which they had settled. So I did the only thing my little frantic 7-year-old brain could think to do to avert this tragedy. If you have children, you've seen this hundreds of times before. I said, Amy, wait, don't cry, don't cry. Did you see how you landed? No human lands on all fours like that. Amy, I think this means you're a unicorn. Now, that was cheating because there's nothing in the world my sister would want more than not to be Amy the hurt 5-year-old little sister, but Amy the special unicorn. Of course, this was an option that was open to her brain at no point in the past. And you could see on my poor, manipulated sister's face conflict as her little brain attempted to devote resources to feeling the pain and suffering surprise she just experienced or contemplating her newfound identity as a unicorn. And the latter won out. Instead of crying, instead of ceasing our play, instead of waking my parents with all the negative consequences that would have ensued for me, instead, a smile spread across her face, and she scrambled right back up onto the bunk bed with all the grace of a baby unicorn with one broken leg. Well, we stumbled across, at this tender age of just 5 and 7, we had no idea at the time, was something that was going to be at the vanguard of a scientific revolution occurring 2 decades later in the way that we look at the human brain. What we had stumbled across is something called positive psychology, which is the reason that I'm here today and the reason that I wake up every morning. When I first started to talk about this research outside of academia, out with companies and schools, the very first thing they said to never do is to start your talk with a graph. The very first thing I wanted to do is start my talk with a graph. This graph looks boring, but this graph is the reason that I get excited and wake up every morning. And this graph doesn't even mean anything. It's fake data. What we found is, if I got this data back studying you here in the room, I would be thrilled, because there's very clearly a trend that's going on there, and that means that I can get published, which is all that really matters. The fact that there's one weird red dot that's up above the curve, there's one weird in the room, you know who you are, I saw you earlier. That's no problem. That's no problem, as most of you know, because I can just delete that dot. I can delete that dot because that's clearly a measurement error. And we know that's a measurement error because it's messing up my data. So one of the very first things that we teach people in economics and statistics and business and psychology courses is, how in a statistically valid way do we eliminate the weirdos? How do we eliminate the outliers? So that we can find the line of best fit, which is fantastic if I'm trying to find out how many Advil the average person should be taking, too. But if I'm interested in potential, if I'm interested in your potential, or for happiness, or productivity, or energy, or creativity, what we're doing is we're creating the cult of the average with science. If I ask a question like, how fast can a child learn how to read in a classroom? Scientists change the answer to, how fast does the average child learn how to read in that classroom? And then we tailor the class right towards the average. Now, if you fall below the average on this curve, then psychologists get thrilled, because that means you're either depressed, or you have a disorder, or hopefully both. We're hoping for both, because our business model is, if you come into a therapy session with one problem, we want to make sure you leave knowing you have 10. So you'll keep coming back over and over again. We'll go back into your childhood if necessary, but eventually what we want to do is to make you normal again. But normal is merely average. And what I posit, and what positive psychology posits, is that if we study what is merely average, we will remain merely average. Then instead of deleting those positive outliers, what I intentionally do is come into a population like this one and says, why? Why is it that some of you are so high above the curve in terms of your intellectual ability, athletic ability, musical ability, creativity, energy levels, your resiliency in the face of challenge, your sense of humor? Whatever it is, instead of deleting you, what I want to do is study you. Because maybe we can glean information, not just how to move people up to the average, but how we can move the entire average up. at our companies and schools worldwide. The reason this graph is important to me is when I turn on the news, it seems like the majority of the information is not positive. In fact, it's negative. Most of it's about murder, corruption, diseases, natural disasters, and very quickly, my brain starts to think that's the accurate ratio of negative to positive in the world. What that's doing is creating something called the medical school syndrome, which if you know people who have been to medical school during the first year of medical training, as you read through a list of all the symptoms and diseases that could happen, suddenly you realize you have all of them. I have a brother-in-law named Bobo, which is a whole other story. Bobo married Amy the Unicorn. Bobo called me on the phone from Yale Medical School. From Yale Medical School, and Bobo said, "Sean, I have leprosy." Which even at Yale is extraordinarily rare. But I had no idea how to console poor Bobo because he had just gotten over an entire week of menopause. See, what we're finding is not necessarily the reality that shapes us, but the lens through which your brain views the world that shapes your reality. And if we can change the lens, not only can we change your happiness, we can change every single educational and business outcome at the same time. When I applied to Harvard, I applied on a dare. I didn't expect to get in, and my family had no money for college. When I got a military scholarship 2 weeks later, they allowed me to go. Suddenly, something that wasn't even a possibility became a reality. When I went there, I assumed everyone else would see it as a privilege as well, that they'd be excited to be there. Even if you're in a classroom full of people smarter than you, you'd be happy just to be in that classroom, which is what I felt. But what I found there is while some people experienced that, when I graduated after my 4 years and then spent the next 8 years living in the dorms with the students, Harvard asked me to. I wasn't that guy. But what happened... I was an officer of Harvard to counsel students through the difficult 4 years, and what I found in my research and my teaching is that these students, no matter how happy they were with the original success of getting into the school, 2 weeks later, their brains were focused not on the privilege of being there, nor on their philosophy or their physics. Their brain was focused on the competition, the workload, the hassles, the stresses, the complaints. When I first went in there, I walked into the freshman dining hall, which is where my friends from Waco, Texas, which is where I grew up, I know some of you have heard of it. When they come to visit me, they look around, they say, "This freshman dining hall looks like something out of Hogwarts from the movie Harry Potter," which it does. This is Hogwarts from the movie Harry Potter, and that's Harvard. And when they see this, they say, "Sean, why do you waste your time studying happiness at Harvard? Seriously, what does a Harvard student possibly have to be unhappy about?" Embedded within that question is the key to understanding the science of happiness. Because what that question assumes is that our external world is predictive of our happiness levels. When in reality, if I know everything about your external world, I can only predict 10% of your long-term happiness. 90% of your long-term happiness is predicted not by the external world, but by the way your brain processes the world. And if we change it, if we change our formula for happiness and success, what we can do is change the way that we can then affect reality. What we found is that only 25% of job successes are predicted by IQ. 75% of job successes are predicted by your optimism levels, your social support, and your ability to see stress as a challenge instead of as a threat. I talked to a boarding school up in New England, probably the most prestigious boarding school, and they said, "We already know that. So every year, instead of just teaching our students, we also have a wellness week, and we're so excited. Monday night, we have the world's leading expert coming in to speak about adolescent depression. Tuesday night is school violence and bullying. Wednesday night is eating disorders. Thursday night is illicit drug use. And Friday night, we're trying to decide between risky sex or happiness." I said, "That's most people's Friday nights." Which I'm glad you liked, but they did not like that at all. Silence on the phone. And into the silence, I said, "I'd be happy to speak at your school, but just so you know, that's not a wellness week. That's a sickness week." What you've done is you've outlined all the negative things that can happen, but not talked about the positive. The absence of disease is not health. Here's how we get to health. We need to reverse the formula for happiness and success. In the past 3 years, I've traveled to 45 different countries, working with schools and companies in the midst of an economic downturn. And what I found is that most companies and schools follow a formula for success, which is this: if I work harder, I'll be more successful. And if I'm more successful, then I'll be happier. That undergirds most of our parenting styles, our managing styles, the way that we motivate our behavior, and the problem is it's scientifically broken and backwards for two reasons. First, every time your brain has a success, you just change the goalpost of what success looked like. You got good grades, now you have to get better grades. You got into a good school, now you have to get a better school. You got a good job, now you have to get a better job. You hit your sales target, we're going to change your sales target. And if happiness is on the opposite side of success, your brain never gets there. What we've done is we've pushed happiness over the cognitive horizon as a society. And that's because we think we have to be successful, then we'll be happier. But the real problem is our brains work in the opposite order. If you can raise somebody's level of positivity in the present, then their brain experiences what we now call a happiness advantage, which is your brain at positive performs significantly better than it does at negative, neutral, or stressed. Your intelligence rises, your creativity rises, your energy levels rise. In fact, what we found is that every single business outcome improves. Your brain at positive is 31% more productive than your brain at negative, neutral, or stress. You're 37% better at sales. Doctors are 19% faster, more accurate at coming up with the correct diagnosis when positive instead of negative, neutral, or stress, which means we can reverse the formula. If we can find a way of becoming positive in the present, then our brains work even more successfully as we're able to work harder, faster, and more intelligently. What we need to be able to do is to reverse this formula so we can start to see what our brains are actually capable of. Because dopamine, which floods into your system when you're positive, has two functions. Not only does it make you happier, it turns on all the learning centers in your brain, allowing you to adapt to the world in a different way. We found that there are ways you can train your brain to be able to become more positive. In just a two-minute span of time, done for 21 days in a row, we can actually rewire your brain, allowing your brain to actually work more optimistically and more successfully. We've done these things in research now in every single company that I've worked with, getting them to write down three new things that they're grateful for 21 days in a row, three new things each day, and at the end of that, their brain starts to retain a pattern of scanning the world not for the negative, but for the positive first. Journaling about one positive experience you've had over the past 24 hours allows your brain to relive it. Exercise teaches your brain that your behavior matters. We find that meditation allows your brain to get over the cultural ADHD that we've been creating by trying to do multiple tasks at once, and allows our brains to focus on the task at hand. And finally, random acts of kindness or conscious acts of kindness. We get people, when they open up their inbox, to write one positive email praising or thanking somebody in their social support network. And by doing these activities, and by training your brain just like we train our bodies, what we found is we can reverse the formula for happiness and success, and in doing so, not only create ripples of positivity, but create a real revolution. Thank you very much.
好，这一段讲座听完了，不知道大家作何感想？先说我自己吧。啊，我们到底工作为了什么？说白了，我不工作的时候，心里有一种不安全感，你有没有？
有，空虚感。
对呀。
哎呀，不知道干嘛了。
像我们以前教课，如果说那个老师不给排课的话，我心里特别发毛。
哦。
他是快到，比如说下星期一上课。这星期五才通知你啊，我从下星期一开始给你排课了，一周几个小时几次。那我在这个收到排课的通知之前呢，我就心里特别忐忑，我就说哟，这个收入有没有着落呀到底。
嗯，
可是当老师的特点就是呢，你这个报班时间没结束，你是不知道这个班是成还是不成。
嗯，
也就是老师要不要上阵。
那您之前是在有一个经济压力的情况下觉得工作，如果没有工作是有压力和不安全感的。那如果是没有经济压力的时候
也一样，
也
我其实确切的来讲，我当时没有什么压力。
哦，
积蓄我是够的。
嗯，
所以我就说人家分析的这个很对，到底工作是为了什么？其实更主要的这个目的，我觉得就是为了把自己的这个不安全感给降至最低。
嗯，那这个不安全感到底来自于什么呢？我觉得有各方面。有这个，当然有这个经济的压力。有一些人如果没有那么多积蓄的话，那不工作就有那种经济上的不安全感。
嗯哼，
还有别的不安全感吗？
那像我这个没有经济方面的考虑了，我还是觉得不安全感。
嗯，
我就说不上来了。
您是不是需要存在感？
也很难说，你要是说认可吧，
嗯，
我也不是没认可过，
对
吧？因为教课嘛，那个大家也都认可，说赵老师教的挺好，那这个认可已经有了。但是没有这个收入这一块呢，我觉得这就是所谓的大多数眼里看这个稳定的收入，其实这是衡量一个人的价值的重要指标。
嗯，
那么在这种指导思想下，当你这个收入不够稳定的时候，你就心里发毛了。但是根据我们刚才听的这个讲话呢，你就会发现了，其实呢，这个标准是谁给的呀？
是你自己给的。
对，就是说别人这样想你又认同了。
嗯，
你自己是完全可以不认同的，
对吗？
所以说我们刚才讲到的这个工作到达到一定标准之后我就玩去了，像这种做法呢，就是说有些信念就让别人相信吧，自己不信就行了。
没错，其实完全可以，只要是你自己相信就行了。
对。
嗯，
那这个讲座呢就是给我的启发，就是我们不能够只低头不看路拉车。
嗯，
低头拉车不看路，这是不行的。
嗯，没错，
你还得要跳出来，
你总得知道为什么而工作。
对，
哎，
你说挣钱，挣的钱我是拿它买东西，我还是说我就是只要挣钱我就感到安全，那我挣钱的这个东西是不是一个合理的标准？
嗯，如果你真是觉得每天工作挣了钱才有安全感，那就去做吧。如果不是的话，
嗯，
或许换一个思路，换一个方向想这个问题，
嗯，
更好。
所以呢，这个就是心理学家啊比较擅长做的事情。那呢，这个 其中呢提到了几个事儿，我觉得也值得说一说啊。就是这个 psychology 这个词的发音，它拼写是 psychologist， psychologist， 这个 p 是不发音的啊，不是 psychology， 而是 psychology。 那这个如果想在做听力记录的时候缩写，大家觉得怎么缩写就能识别出来还原成 psychology 这个词呢？我觉得写一个 PS 就行了，因为这个英文里边 PS 开头的单词
很少
、没错，你一写 PS 你就知道，你顶多再加一个 Y 你就能够简略的回忆起这是 psychology。 好，另外在这个文章里呢，这个讲座的人呢举了一个有意思的例子，他和他的妹妹，当时呢他妹妹呢就是摔了跟头，可是如果这个妹妹一哭得，这个家长要一听见那可了不得了啊，就他没把这个妹妹照顾好，那肯定就是一通的责骂。所以当时呢他采取了一个什么措施呢？他就说，哎，你看你从树上掉下来是吧，四脚着地，说没有人类是四脚着地的，只有 unicorn 是四脚着地的。Unicorn 就是一个独角兽，然后马上呢他妹妹就把这个哭这事儿给忘了，然后就屁颠屁颠乐颠颠的回去说，我是 Unicorn 啊，我是独角兽。所以他从这个例子呢，你看这小孩他就会思考哈，他就说明什么东西呢，就是人遇到困难的时候，困难本身是可怕的吗？
不可怕，主要是你怎么看待它。
对了，你看待这个事情的角度决定了你是什么样的心理和反应。
没错
啊，虽然这个例子呢很简单，但是我觉得如果说大家能落实到自己的日常生活中，确实是不容易，
不容易。
看待工作是这样，看待生活里边的坎坷也是这样。
好，到了节目最后呢，我们再来问壮壮老师一个有关于听力的问题啊。很多同学啊每周末都会听我们的 TED TED Talk， 但是呢有反映一些问题，说这个 TED TED Talk 啊太难了，语速太快，生词太多，听不太明白。当然能听懂一部分，但是有一部分是听不明白的，所以很恼火。这个情况下还有没有必要继续听 TED TED Talk？
好，那这个问题呢我觉得要这样看啊，就是在你选择素材阅读或者听力的时候呢，这个素材可以分两类。一类呢就是你要弄到100%的明白，这一类呢其实就是像托福啊雅思啊这一类的阅读听力材料都这样处理，这叫精读精听。还有一类呢就叫泛读泛听。也就是你不需要把它的100%都搞懂，你听懂一个大意，听懂个60-70%-70%-70%就行了，你也不用查字典。这就是为什么我们把 TED Talk 这个呢放在周末比较轻松的这么一个时段给大家，你也不用有什么负担，对吧？你周末呢你就听，哎，你是能学三个词儿你就学三个词儿，你能学一个词儿你就学一个词儿。而且 TED Talk 为什么要选呢？它有一些前沿的科研的成果，还有一些呢思想的火花，我觉得这些呢都是值得给大家推介的。那我们学语言，语言只是个工具而已，我们拿这个工具干什么？我们是要做交流，思维上的碰撞，这个其实是语言很重要的一个功能。所以呢我的结论就是大家还是听，反正我们用中文是吧，会把这个中心的思想给大家概括出来。那当然有的人也会说了，那可能我们也会搜到视频啊这些东西，我不建议你看视频。为什么呢？因为视频它是一个拐棍儿，你就等于你要是没有视频的帮助，你完全靠你的听力理解对于词的发音的掌控，这个呢会训练你用耳朵去捕捉信息，也就是练你的听力，而不是练你的这个视力。那这个就是怎么去合理的使用这些广播节目素材的方法，希望对大家有所帮助。
好，那今天节目就这些，感谢大家的收听。最后欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，群号码是90127292，欢迎您的加入。
好嘞，感谢大家收听，我们下次节目再见。
给你一个机会，你最想得到什么东西？
汽车
Money
豪宅
漂亮女朋友
娃娃健康。
北京人民广播电台提醒您，关爱自己的健康才能带来长久的幸福。
pull up in your fast car whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take our body downtown. I say you're the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on, go play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's all for you, everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you, tell me all the things you wanna do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I ever even knew. They say that the world was built for two. Only worth living if somebody is loving you. Baby, now. Swinging with the old stars, living for the fame. Kissing in the blue dark, playing pool and wild dogs, video game.
You alright? Alright.
He holds me in his big arms, drunk and I am seeing stars, this is all I think of. Watching all our friends fall in and out of old clothes, this is my idea of fun. Playing video games. It's you, it's you, it's all for you. Everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you. Tell me all the things you want to do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I. Tell you all the time, heaven is a place.